Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio, Year 12. All the details for this show, and there are a lot of details, can be found at mulliganstew.ca. When you go there, you'll find the Mulligan Stew podcast, you'll find Mulligan Stew, the radio show, and you'll find Tasting Room Radio. This is Tasting Room Radio. It's the 41st annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. The feature region is California. Great friends of anyone who's a wine fan in Canada, truly, and around the world. It's an embarrassment of riches. There are so many great interviews, and every one of them is either the winemaker or the person who founded the winery or is the CEO of the winery today. We'll start with the keynote speaker, JonBenét, who is one of the great voices for California wine, followed up by Bob Blue, who was the winemaker at 1,000 Stories and Bonterra, and Craig McAllister, the winemaker at La Crema, followed by the winemaker at Sparrow Splash, that's Cannonball, Undine Chatton, along with Randy Lang from the Lang Twins. They're followed by Emma Swain, who is the CEO at St. Supery Estate, and Paul Wagner, truly a legend in California wine circles. Paul Wagner speaks his mind. The wonderful Harvest Duhigg, one of the winemakers at Wagner Family Wines. And someone she'd never met before, Kristen Barnheisel, who's the winemaker at J. Lohr. We finish off the show with Randy Meyer from Geyser Peak, Carl Wente from Wente Vineyards, and then two of my favorite people, Ray Signorello from Signorello Estate, who lost his winery in the fires in Napa, and Randy Ullum, the gunslinger from Kendall Jackson. That's our first show from the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Next week, Barry Olivier from Aquilini Red Mountain, Jean-Charles Boisset, and Gina Gallo, and John Skinner, and Valerie Tate, and Stefan Arneson, and Chris Jentsch from CC Jentsch, and Randy Pickman from Incomeep, and many, 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 many more. Here we go. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. Join Blacksmith Vineyards and Jason Parks Customs on Wednesday, December the 18th, for an intimate evening with winemaker Jason Parks and crew as they celebrate the completion of their new Blacksmith cellar and future tasting room. The night features a homestyle long table feast paired with a selection of Blacksmith wines and tank tastings of select new vintages. Keep in mind, Jason Parks will give a speech, but heckling is allowed. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This is the 41st annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. My name is Terry David Mulligan. Myself and James have decided to set up right by the spectacular glass at one of the halls at the convention center. And we wanted to start with the keynote speaker, JonBenét. And he has just walked up. We might as well start the show. Congratulations. And first of all, on the California love here today. Share, for those of us who weren't in the room, the high note of your speech that you talked today.
All the lessons from California?
Yeah.
Make good wine, obviously. No, so a lot of it was based on my first book, which was The New California Wine. Where I started was because we were, to some extent, talking about California and how that reflects on BC wine and Canadian wine, and obviously the very fast and very good growth here, but sort of looking into the future and figuring out how to keep that going. So I started talking about what I call the sin of proximity, which is that you always have to be cautious that you're not talking to too many of your neighbors and just getting reverb. Because I saw that in California. That's in some way what happened in Napa, where everyone was just kind of talking to each other and, you know, looking to get the same scores and same points. And we're all making kind of the same wine and thought that they would make a bigger and bigger and better style, better, quote unquote, better style. And now they're making these kind of very expensive, very over the top wines, and they don't really know where to sell them except in China. And so they didn't see the market changing because they weren't really looking outside the windows quite enough. So I started there, and then from there sort of was talking about the rate of change, which is very fast. And right before that, when we were having our discussion about the symposium panel, we were talking about the Okanagan style, for instance, what, say, Okanagan can specifically bring to the market, and the idea that there's freshness, there's the ability to get good acidity without having to work the wine in the winery and yeah, acidify any of that. So that's really fortunate, because that's now what the market increasingly wants globally. And so What I was saying is when all the new style of California was coming out, people said, well, that's great. These wines are really interesting, but we can't get them in the market. They'll never sell. You know, this is all just the fringe. And nearly everyone who said that, within a year, their market was completely flooded with all these new wines. I was thinking specifically of Minnesota. But anyway, so it's, you know, there's lots of opportunity for change, and change happens fast.
The keynote speaker, Jean Benet. Did you give them up? Well, there's a couple of questions right there. One, we'll get to the social net and millennials. But first, did you make a comment on rosé?
I got through the entire day without talking about rosé.
Okay, let me give you a quote from Jean Benet. He wrote, "Not all pink wine needs to be summer water, but Whispering Angel should be cast into some Miltonian iteration of hell."
Yes.
And how was the reaction to that?
Well, I didn't hear from the Whispering Angel people, not surprisingly. You know, it's a wine that tends to divide people based on your view of the wine world. And the people who I guess I talked to more often were pretty happy and probably shared that view to begin with. But, you know, we all sit around drinking Bandol Rosé in the winter, so we're all kind of crazy.
So about who is the new market, the millennials and their wonderful internet web machine. How fast is that changing the wine business and the marketing?
It's happening astonishingly fast. And I think one place you actually do see it is in California, less in the wines even than the rate of sales of legacy wineries.
Yes.
Something like Stony Hill, something like Kosta Browne sold a couple years ago, but even Calera, that a lot of legacy brands, they are quite simply losing more and more of their customers. If you've had customers for 30, 35 years, you know, folks are drinking less. They've got cellars full of wine, and now their kids are sort of picking it up, and they want, of course, as children do, they want to drink anything but what their parents drink.
Anything but what their parents are drinking. And
yeah.
The smaller the vintage, the smaller the caseload, the better.
And I think that a lot of the barriers that have often been up against more quote-unquote obscure styles of wine just aren't there anymore. People will drink anything. And we were talking about it yesterday, that if you look at the success of hybrids made by kind of natural winemakers, this is in Nova Scotia, this is in Quebec, this is in Vermont. I mean, these are places where hybrids have traditionally been planted, and they've always been a difficult sell.
Yeah.
And now this new generation of winemakers has a completely different view of wine, and they're making hybrid Pet Nat. And we were saying, like, the, you know, one of the most allocated wines in New York right now is a hybrid Pet Nat from Quebec, which no one in a million years could have predicted.
Never. Okay, if this audience is heading for California to wine country, and there's a lot of wine country there, two do's, two don'ts.
Two do's. Make sure to go see a small winery where you actually have to make an appointment, and it's not just walk into a tasting room.
Okay, that's one.
And I think, you know, find a place, either wherever city you're going, find a place that's got a really good local wine list and try to make some headway into it. Two don'ts. Don't go to a tasting room that that you've heard of and you're three deep. And, you know, I say, especially if someone's coming down from here, don't just stick to the wines you know, because there's a lot of stuff that isn't in the market yet.
That's right.
That's extraordinary.
Yep. You have another book in you?
I do. I have another book in me. The trick is getting it out. The new French wine, which hopefully will be out next year.
Thank you so much, Jean Benet.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
The keynote speaker, Jean Benet. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. When we come back, Bob Blue from Bonterra and Thousand Stories, and Craig McAllister from Lacrima.
This is Tasting Room Radio. Here's your host, Terry David Mulligan.
I have, as promised, Bob Blue from Bonterra and 1,000 Stories, and I also have from Lacrima, Craig McAllister, the winemaker. Welcome. Tell me, first of all, what you're pouring for Lacrima. What are you pouring today?
Today at the desk, we're pouring a rosé, two chardonnays, Monterey and Sonoma Coast, and Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir, and a special Russian River single vineyard Pinot.
That's this one right here?
That's the one, the Fog Veil.
I'm intrigued by this. Fog Veil.
Yeah, it's actually two of our estate vineyards in the Santa Rosa Plains, but they're neighboring. So we say it's a single vineyard offering. And as the name implies, the vineyard is veiled by fog most mornings and then recedes away, and it's a lovely, warm growing region for Pinot.
Does that qualify as dry farming?
No, it's irrigated. So okay. Yeah, no dry farming there.
And Bob, I know that you're going to pour Bonterra. Yes.
Yes.
But right. I'm thrilled to say that there's a bottle of 1,000 Stories.
Right.
And then there's an Elysium Collection.
Right.
Tell me about that guy.
Yeah.
The little sheep bottle.
We were just on the panel talking about that. This is something new for us. It's really a collection of wines, and we're introducing a Merlot. And these are really, we asked the winemaker, Jeff Sahaki, to really sort of pick his favorite blocks and best barrels to make a wine that's kind of breaks a little bit of barriers. It's in a Burgundy bottle, and it has just a sheep on the front, kind of an homage to, you know, what we're doing is, you know, using all sorts of animals and you know, really bringing a vineyard to life with more than just vines.
Bob Blue from Bonterra and 1,000 Stories. It was something financial that where you decided to use bourbon barrels because regular oak barrels were a lot of dough, and nobody else was doing it that I know of. How many people are now releasing?
Oh my gosh! Every week it seems like there's another bourbon barrel aged wine,
and they're starting to label them so that whiskey is very prominent.
Whiskey and rum. I saw rum. So yeah, it's really amazing. We were the first to do it, finding it that, you know, it was really complimentary to Zinfandel and added something new and actually brings new consumers into wine, and it's gone amazing. It's gone crazy.
And Bonterra is just has a solid position in the California and in the world wine business. Yes.
Yeah, we've been doing this now for 30 years, and you know, a couple of years ago we were one of the magazines that has Winery of the Year, and you know, we really had this goal that, you know, through organic agriculture we'd be better at winemaking just this pursuit of finding really alternative ways to grow grapes that would be a benefit to all. And so we've kind of grown little by little, and here we are.
That's Bob Blue, Bonterra, and 1,000 Stories. Craig McAllister, the winemaker at La Crema, is the one thing you strive for as the winemaker at La Crema to be consistent? In other words, we knew that bottle 2 years ago, and we knew it last year. Is it going to have to be somewhere in that ballpark this year?
Absolutely. I think with this one here, this Sonoma Coast Chardonnay, for example, it has to be consistent because, you know, we have a fairly large band of loyal consumers that like our wines. So they're looking for the same wine year after year. I think in some of our smaller, say the single vineyard wines, those are the ones where you're going to see differences very subtle from year to year based on the growing season. But a wine like this, it's consistency from year to year.
Is there something new that you're pouring here today?
Yeah, we've got our Monterey Rosé here for the first time as well.
That.
So rosés are very popular at the moment. And we started making a Monterey Rosé in 2017 and have that here to taste today.
Who is the rosé drinker these days?
You know, I think it's everybody. And I think it's gone from being a seasonal drink to a year-round drink as well. And I think that's driving the demand for rosés these days.
Bob Blue, you don't seem like a rosé guy.
Like a what? Like
a rosé guy?
I love rosés.
I understand.
As I've gotten older, I go full circle. I've gone to more, you know, kind of real clean, crisp white wines and also to rosés. I just love those. The acidity is something I really enjoy. We just introduced something that's sort of a byproduct of making rosé. We have, you know, the press fraction. We're making something called Young Red. And it's a lot like a Beaujolais. It's very bright and gives you some of the characteristic of rosé, but a little bit of red wine. So it's a chillable red wine. So we've had some fun with that.
I can remember being in just outside of Ensenada in Mexico, and they had all their skins as pavement on the ground just to keep the dust down. But I mean, you're making Young Red. Are there any wines pouring here today that we will not see here? Are you just teasing us, or are they all available? How about you, Craig?
I think for us at La Crema, the Fog Veil is certainly a tease. You know, within that series of wines, the single vineyard expressions, that's one of four of them at this stage. So you may see the Fog Veil again. You may see one or two of the single vineyard Chardonnays or the other Pinot as well.
How about
and
you?
For us, it would be the Elysian, the Merlot. That's just, we're showing it, and I think that will come here.
Here's the thing about that Merlot. It doesn't taste like a Merlot. You kind of set your mind to what a California Merlot might be like. Is there any oak in there at all?
Oh, yeah. It's actually, that's one of the tricks, I think, is we use sort of medium toast on the barrel, and so you get more of the sort of it's almost like having a light toasted coffee. You know, okay. You really taste the nut of the coffee, yeah, rather than the roast. And so we're usually about 50% new oak, but it's a lower toast level, so it adds to the richness of the wine without the obvious coffee kind of aromas.
I can't thank them enough for sitting in with me in this very crazy room. Bob Blue from Bonterra, 1,000 Stories, Craig McAllister, La Crema, thank you very much. Have yourself a great growing year and just ride off into the sunset. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. Join Blacksmith Vineyards and Jason Parks Customs on Wednesday, December the 18th, for an intimate evening with winemaker Jason Parks and crew as they celebrate the completion of their new Blacksmith cellar and future tasting room. The night features a home-style long table feast paired with a selection of Blacksmith wines and tank tastings of select new vintages. Keep in mind, Jason Parks will give a speech, but heckling is allowed. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Treat your family or staff to a special evening at Unsworth Restaurant during the holidays. Keep in mind that Chef Martin has created a seasonal menu. He also has a 5-course dinner for your New Year's Eve plans. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. It's the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. We're over in the corner, and yes, it is going to get noisier from here. This is only the trade component, but they're louder than normal. Randall Lang from the Lang Twins, we'll call him Randy from that point on, and Ondine Chatton, C-H-A-T-T-A-N, from Share a Splash Wine Company. Randy, we're going to start with Ondine because we need to know about Share a Splash and about Cannonball, the bottle that's sitting in front of me. Cannonball, we know.
Yes.
Cowboys and Angels, we know.
Yes.
Where the heck, you got me hooked on Cowboys and Angels Rosé. I can't find a bottle of it.
Oh, well, I've got a whole case full behind us, so come on over.
But will we see more of it in the market?
Yes, we certainly hope to, absolutely. So it has been a really successful wine for us. We love making it. It's Grenache-based Rosé with a couple other little blenders in it. But yes, we have been selling out year on year. We made a little bit more out of 2018, so I'm hoping it'll be more available.
And I'll get you, I promise. Tell me what, because Cannonball really flies off the shelf, the Cabernet Sauvignon, the 2016. Was it a blend of different vineyards that made that work?
Made for the Cabernet, yes. So our sourcing, of course, is so important, and I think any winemaker will tell you Of course, it starts in the vineyard, but consistency is also what's been hugely important to us. And the entire brand was really founded on making an everyday Cabernet that had wide crowd appeal, but also was serious wine, but not too serious. So a wine that you could enjoy every day without having to overthink it, without having to extended cellar age it. At the same time, we are very proud of what we do, and so we're meticulous about choosing our sourcing, whether it is from coastal vineyards near the winery or some inland sources as well.
We have choices.
We have a beautiful tapestry to choose from.
Tell them about your crazy owner.
Oh, my crazy owner. Are we talking about Yoav?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've got a couple crazy people in the company, myself included. Yoav is a wonderful fellow. So his dream, he originally came from Israel. When he moved to the United States and got an MBA and a law degree at the same time, he was thinking he needed to make a mark and do something. And he kind of tried a couple different industries, but wine really resonated with him. The idea that wine brings people together, that it's something that you can incorporate into your daily life and really enhance your enjoyment of life. And Yoav lives that. He absolutely embodies that spirit.
Randy Lang from Lang Twins in Lodi and from Share a Splash and Cannonball, Ondine Chatton. Randy, after doing all the interviews that you've done over the years, have you got the 30-second version of how your family arrived to this point today at this table?
Oh, my goodness.
How far back do we go?
We go back in Lodi since 1870. My grandfather was born in Lodi, so we're a fourth-generation Lodi, so we're the absolute stuck-in-Lodi family. And so we've been growing grapes up to Prohibition. Prohibition kind of stopped that. After Prohibition, they got back into growing grapes. And we've been in wine grapes ever since. We were not a winery.
Okay.
So we were growers. I am a grower. Sure. I am not a winemaker. Okay. I'm proud of that. I spent the first 40 years of my professional life growing wine grapes. And actually, during that 40 years, I went from a wine grape grower to a wine grower. It was five kids that got us into the winemaking business, and we started making wine in 2006.
Exactly. Could you have imagined the growth for Lang Twins?
Not in the least. And I will be honest with you, every now and then I'll stop and look at our winery and I think of my dad, because I don't think he would have never, ever imagined what we've accomplished in our short time of starting as growers and moving into the wine business.
And how are you getting along with your brother these days?
You know, we're 69 years old. I have been with my twin brother for 64 of those 69 years.
Nice.
So I get along with him very, very well.
I wrote down this note about Central Valley. Huge. It's where Gallo sort of makes their yep. living. But there are old vines in Lodi. Why is there not more of you out there?
Well, it depends on how you want to define old. I redefine old every year at every birthday time.
Right.
But the reality is, you know, old vines. My Zinfandel are made from a vineyard that my grandfather planted in 1939. The wine in front of you was planted, this is the 106th vintage off that vineyard. So it's a very old vineyard. Now it's 116 years old. They survived through Prohibition because there was a number of people that packed fresh fruit, Zinfandel, shipped them to the New York and Boston markets, sold it as fresh fruit to immigrant families that made their homemade wines.
Randall Lang from the Lang Twins, we'll call him Randy, and Ondine Chatton from Sheriff Splash Wine Company. I just want to let you know that this gorgeous bottle, Lang Twins Centennial 2011 Zinfandel, is being poured. It's the pride of Lodi, California.
That's correct.
That's where you are, and that's where you're going to be. By the way, where's the next generation?
Next generation. There's five kids between Brad's and my family. They're all work for the family business. So two of them are working on the farm side. The other three kids are working on the winery side. So me, as the dad, my number one job is to get out of their way, and that's what we're doing.
Ondine, a question about Sheriff Splash and Cannonball. What should we expect out of this winery in the future?
We're working on a lot of things, but the most exciting project is what we have called Cannonball 11, which is celebrating the 11th year that the company has been in business. For us, that's a pivotal moment. Making it past 10 years really means that we're established. A lot of brands have come and gone. So we released Cannonball 11 at the end of 2018, and it's four wines focusing on Sonoma County, where we're located, where the winery is located. But we have a Sonoma Coast Chardonnay, a Dry Creek Sauvignon Blanc, a Sonoma County Cabernet, and a Sonoma County Merlot.
Well done. Well, busy. Listen, last question. You attend a lot of festivals, rooms just like this. Is there a different sense of Vancouver and the wine festival here? Do we have a voice?
Oh, this is the benchmark. In my opinion, I've been to a lot of them. This is a well-organized, it's the benchmark for everybody else to try to attain this level of the wine show.
They touch all the bases?
They do.
I agree. It's amazing. It's so well run, so organized, so welcoming, and so knowledgeable. I cannot get over the familiarity that customers already have, whether it's buyers or consumers.
Have you noticed how much we like California wines?
Oh, yes.
We appreciate that.
Yes, we certainly do.
And yeah. I think your cuisine here is something else. It pairs so beautifully. I know you have your own amazing wine industry here as well in British Columbia, but this is just the perfect sort of melting pot between the two, between us down south and you guys up north.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank
right.
you.
Randall Lang, we'll call him Randy Lang from Lang Twins in Lodi, and from Sheriff Splash and Cannonball, Ondine Chatton.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Oh, I am knee-deep in people I've wanted to meet for a long time. Emma Swaim from St. Supri is directly across from me. And Paul Wagner's card says, I am retired, ask someone else. my kind of guy. Emma, welcome to the show and welcome to Vancouver.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I love being in Vancouver. It's so gorgeous here. And being the host winery this year, we get the best view in the house.
How did the Napa auction go this year? Were you part and parcel of that?
Oh, Premier Napa Valley?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. You know, it's my favorite week in Napa Valley is Premier. We get to see everyone from all over the world, all our friends, taste great wines. And, it's a big week. Of course, it was just last week. But we raised about $3.7 million. And we had a lot fewer lots than last year because 17 was such a small vintage.
Right. Didn't you do a special bottling with a special tree and a special set of barrels?
We did. So when Michael and I were in Bordeaux in 2016, we were at our cooper, and he was telling us about these special trees that he had purchased at auction from a forest planted by Louis the 14th.
Oh, him.
And so the trees were over 350 years old when they were auctioned off, and then he had them in the yard for a year as a full tree, and then 3 years as staves, and he made a small selection of collection barrels. And so we did some tastings from his vineyard with the older oak, and oh my God, what amazing wines they made. So we were able to purchase 6 of them from that vintage, and we said, we're going to make our premier Napa Valley lot with this. This is going to be fabulous. And so we did some barrel fermentation with the different components of our lot, all from our Rutherford vineyard in that special oak tree, and oh my God, amazing, amazing wine.
I'm going to come back to your winery in just a moment of what you're pouring today. Paul, I wanted to ask you about, do we know enough about all of your appellations, all your AVAs? We know Napa, we know Sonoma, but there are other areas of California, and I'm wondering, we should be heading there this summer.
Anybody who describes themselves as a wine expert, and I've taught wine classes at Napa Valley College for 25 years. Yes. Anybody who describes themselves as a wine expert is just telling you they don't know how much they don't know. Because, yeah, there are 16, 17 appellations just in the Napa Valley, sub-appellations.
Right.
And if you added them all up, it would be as confusing as any other wine region in the world. So the answer is no, but the whole fun of wine is that every time you go out and order a bottle, you have a chance to try something new and discover a new region.
Are you interested in Temecula and the South Coast?
Oh, sure.
Are you interested in the Sierra Foothills?
I've done work with some of the stuff. They make fabulous Barbera up in the Sierra Foothills.
Oh,
really better there than anywhere else in California.
Can you make wine in the Redwoods?
You can, and you can actually make pretty good Pinot Noir in the Redwoods.
Hmm. Wow. Very nice. Emma Swaim from St. Supri. What are you pouring over at St. Supri?
Oh, I'm pouring our Napa Valley Estate Sauvignon Blanc, which is 100% Sauvignon Blanc from our Dollarhide Vineyard, all stainless steel.
A consistent gold medal winner at every competition.
Oh, thank you. I love this wine. And then our Vertu, which is our Semillon Sauvignon Blanc blend, our Rutherford Vineyard Merlot, and our Elu, which is our red Bordeaux varietal blend, and our Napa Valley Estate Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's good.
Yeah, there's some great wines. Looking around the room, there's fantastic wines everywhere.
This is a great pour today. I have to tell you, when nobody was here, just walked around and fondled the bottles and just realized that this was a very special pour today.
Well, yeah. In fact, one of the things I love, I haven't seen Emma in 2-3 years. I get to come to the Vancouver Wine Festival and reconnect with Carl Wente and John Rule and Gina Gallo and Jean-Charles Boisset from California, but people I've known from New Zealand, Italy, Spain, Chile, they're all here.
That's cool.
It's just like one big giant party.
By the way, I want to congratulate you. I don't know when you got this award. I think it was last year. The American Wine Society, the winner of its annual Award of Merit 2018.
Yeah, that's right, in November.
Was it a cash prize as well?
No. In fact, I had to buy my ticket to the
wonderful event.
But it was a really, really wonderful. That's the largest consumer wine organization in the world.
Did you know who else had won that award?
I've heard a few fairly important people.
Like Gina Gallo, Robert Mondavi, Warren Wodonarski.
I've heard of them.
Yes. And you.
You know them all.
That's right. Actually, I do know them all.
How have you influenced the way the public drinks and thinks about wine, do you think?
Well, I'm a huge believer in the fact that I don't think we should tell people quite so much about how we make the wine, and I think we should tell people a little more about the joy that wine brings. So instead of, you know, the analogy I use is music. When a new song comes out, nobody says you should really study composition and harmonic suspension and counterpoint to really understand what Lady Gaga's doing in this song.
Yeah.
All they say is, isn't it cool, and dance to the music. And I think we miss a bet by not telling people how much fun it is to drink wine and how wonderful it is as a beverage.
Emma Swaim from St. Supri.
Okay, so our campaign this year is Enjoy, I-N, joy.
There you go.
And we just want people to take a picture of what brings them joy. So we're calling it Share the Joy and Enjoy.
Beautiful.
When people ask me, usually they ask me after they've gone across the border, and they don't give me any thinking time at all. They say, where should we go in California? And I like to say, go and find the estate wineries.
Oh, thank you.
The estate, how many are there? There's half a dozen, maybe?
There's about a dozen in Napa Valley that are 100% estate.
And that's literally, the French wineries are like that. Everything they produce comes into that cellar surrounding them, right?
And there's a lot of us here today.
Ray Signorello, as a matter of fact, is one of those as well.
And Terfethen, and Russ Weiss from Silverado Vineyards, and Gergich. So you've got most of us here.
Fantastic. 5 years down the road, what do you think we'll be talking about in terms of California?
God, I hope we're talking about how much fun it is to drink California wine. You are seeing all sorts of people exploring new directions, from Randall Graham planting an entire vineyard and waiting to see what comes up, to people making all sorts of innovations, both in the winery and in the vineyard. One of the things California really brought to the world of wine is this attitude of, let's try this and see what happens. And it's not quite as freeform as, here, hold my beer and watch this. But it is the idea that we want to try stuff and see what's new and exciting. And the thing that I think is wonderful is 5 years from now, it's quite possible the hottest wine in California be one that hasn't been made yet. We don't know what's going to be exciting because we're always trying new stuff.
And is your antenna fully up about what people are telling you here?
I think that, you know, people want to drink things that are delicious.
Yeah.
There's a concept.
And not be told how delicious they are. Just drink them and just discover. This is wonderful. Thank you both for sitting with us.
Thanks so
a
much.
Treat.
Enjoy yourself.
Thank you too.
Thank you. Randy Lang from Lang Twins, Undine Chetton from Cowboys and Angels and Cannibal, the legendary Paul Wagner, Emma Swain, the CEO of Saint Supri. Coming up, David Gates Jr. from Ridge, Russell Weiss from Silverado, Harvest Duhigg from Wagner Family Wines, and Kristen Barnheisel from J. Lohr on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Treat your family or staff to a special evening at Unsworth Restaurant during the holidays. Keep in mind that Chef Martin has created a seasonal menu. He also has a 5-course dinner for your New Year's Eve plans. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. Welcome back. Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. Details, and there's lots of them, can be found at mulliganstew.ca. It's a website that contains Mulligan Stew Radio, Mulligan Stew Podcast, and this show, Tasting Room Radio. All right, we're going back to the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival at the Convention Center. Four of the greatest wineries in California. Next, David Gates from Ridge, Russell Weiss, Silverado, Harvest Duhigg from Wagner Family, who make Conundrum and others, and Kristen Barnheisel, winemaker at J. Lohr. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13. Their very popular Advent calendars are back, and an added bonus this year, free shipping anywhere in Canada. Road 13 Advent calendars include 12 bottles of wine, each individually wrapped, a mix of red and white wines they've been stashing away, a mix of current releases, club executive wines, limited releases, and sold-out wines. Check them out at road13vineyards.com. Welcome back, Tasting Room Radio. Terry David Mulligan. Busy, busy, busy room. It's the trade tasting, and tonight will be even louder. David Gates Jr. is the Senior VP of Winemaking Operations at Ridge Vineyards. And to his left, your audience right, Russ Weiss, who is the General Manager of Silverado. Welcome, first of all, welcome.
Great to be here.
I want to ask you what you're pouring today. David Gates.
Oh, my gosh. We have our Estate Chardonnay 2016. Three Zin-based wines, two of them 100% Zin, the 2016 Paso Robles, 2016 East Bench, and then a blended wine, which I have with me, our Geyserville 2016, and then last but not least, our Estate Cab from 2015 from Santa Cruz Mountains.
And how many different regions are we talking about here?
Oh, this is three regions. So the Estate Cab and Estate Chardonnay are Santa Cruz Mountains.
Right.
The Paso Robles is Paso Robles, the Zin from there. And then the other two are actually more. So the East Bench is Dry Creek, Northern Sonoma County.
Yeah.
And the Geyserville is Alexander Valley. But they're only a mile or so apart.
But how different are they being a mile apart? Different. That's just as it.
That's why
they could be beside each other. They could be.
Yes, that's why we made them into separate wines. Absolutely.
Wow. Russ Weiss, who is the general manager of Silverado. What are you pouring today?
So we've got our Miller Ranch Sauvignon Blanc, which is in the Yountville appellation, which is the very first vineyard that the Miller family purchased in 1976.
Yeah.
I guess I'll keep going with the whites. We have our Weinberg Chardonnay, which is also a Singer Vineyard expression. So we're going from the oldest vineyard that the family purchased to the youngest one. We purchased that in 2000, and that's over on the Sonoma side of Carneros.
Right.
Beautiful area. And then a couple of wines from our Mount George Vineyard. That site was first planted in 1868, and we're happy to grow all kinds of stuff on there, but we're showing off a Merlot and our Geo, which is the single Cabernet expression from that site. So Geo, kind of our little nickname, Greek for earth, and short for George, which is the mountain where the vineyard crawls up against.
Did you sneak in any Solo?
I did not sneak in any Solo.
Nothing under the table?
You know what? It's a really excellent question. Nope, haven't got that here.
First of all, David, tell me what is your favorite region or a favorite spot or a favorite vineyard? Is there one that really captured your heart?
Now it's like who's your favorite kid, your favorite pet.
But I'm thinking for everybody in the audience who wants to get there and try those ones.
Well, so can I make two?
Sure you can.
Oh, good. Thank you. Because we have two wineries as it stands. Montebello is in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and that's dear to my heart because that's, that was our estate vineyard when I first started at Ridge back in 1989.
And how old is that winery?
The first iteration of it was completed in the early 1890s.
Exactly.
And then Paul Draper, when he joined as winemaker in 1969, renovated that winery. So it's been seen quite a bit.
Oldest,
went through Prohibition.
Oldest vines there?
The oldest vines at Montebello were planted in 1949. Still have a 3-acre block of Cabernet. Most of them are pretty, it's pretty cool. But the neat thing is we've selected budwood from them, and so we have some clones that are available through Foundation Plant Services, the Clean Stock Program. So you can get those old vines. And then the other one would be Lytton Springs, and that's Dry Creek Valley.
Russ Weiss from Silverado, do you have a special vineyard?
Probably you mentioned it. We're most known for Solo, and that's our heritage clone, the UCD30, that the Budwood, was, field selected over about a 20-year span on that site. But I got to say, as a farmer, I really love Mount George. And a little known fact, David actually developed that vineyard for us. I love it because it's. In Silverado, we've got a bunch of aspects, a bunch of slopes, about 7 different soil types. It keeps me on my toes trying to get everything to ripen at the right time and evenly. Whereas at Mount George, it's just that beautiful Coombsville gravelly loam that goes, down that from about 15-degree slope right on down to the apron, which is about 7-degree slope. So well-drained. Even, beautiful. That vineyard makes you look really good as a winemaker.
I love asking that question because I can see the sparkle in your eyes. Here's the thing. You're a member of the board of directors of the Stag's Leap District Association. How special is Stag's Leap? I mean, it's a name that jumps out at us, but how special is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can answer that in a number of ways. I mean, I think from the point of view of an appellation in Napa, it's maybe one of the most well defined. It's the smallest. The soils are more or less that beautiful sort of Perkins loam and so it's more uniform than a lot of appellations. I think it's also special because it's so small. Like we're a bunch of teeny tiny folks there, and we all know each other. So it's a really beautiful neighborhood from a from a human perspective. I think it's fabulous. Yeah.
How many different districts now are you growing with Ridge?
Oh man, you're making me think. Let's see. I can start naming them off. Dry Creek, Alexander Valley.
There you go.
Russian River, Chalk Hill. Oh, I haven't got there yet.
Okay.
Sonoma Valley, Napa Valley up by Calistoga.
Sure.
Occasionally, and then Contra Costa County. a little bit from Lodi. Yeah, we're going back there. And then Santa Cruz Mountains, which is its kind of own appellation, and then Paso Robles. So it's a bunch.
So sense of place can be found in the wines, especially the single vineyards. I have a quote here from David, and it says, Ridge's mission statement, I love this, find intense, flavorful grapes, intrude upon the process only when necessary, draw the fruit's distinctive character and richness into the wine.
Yeah, that's not my quote, but I stand behind it.
Oh, I like that. It's yours now.
Yeah, good deal. No, that's kind of what, and I would bring that all the way back to Paul Draper and actually Dave Bennion, the first winemaker at Ridge,
yep,
back in the 60s. They just wanted to let the vines and the sense of place express themselves. And, you know, they try not to do much winemaking. I mean, it's still winemaking, but it's more shepherding, right? That's what it's all about.
I mean, there's a lot of decisions, but the decisions are more focused on what can you, in a given season, what is that site showing you that it wants to do? That's really the important thing. And, man, what the Vineyards Ridge has, that's always a joy. So.
Yeah, and one great thing that is when you've been in the business for a while, you find good properties,
and
then you can make separate wines for them, like
that's
Gio.
Right. That's
you know,
right.
That's the way to do it. That really is.
I'd like to see some more Petite Syrah from California.
Yes.
Simple as that.
I totally agree.
I think it's perfect. Perfect. That grape and that area. Thank you both for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Pour away. Get home safely.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, good deal. Right. Thanks.
Take care.
David Gates Jr. is the Senior VP of Winemaking Operations at Ridge Vineyards. Russ Weiss, who is the General Manager of Silverado.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. Oh, I'm having the time of my life. This is fantastic. It's all the star winemakers in one room. I thought these two people knew each other. I thought these two ladies had probably met. Harvest Duhigg, Wagner Family Wines winemaker, and Kristen Barnheisel from J. Lohr. But you have never met?
Not until just now.
No, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Kristen.
How about that? I mean, how big is the industry that you haven't crossed paths at one time or another? It's crazy, right? Well, first of all, you're spending all your time in the field and in the cellars.
Correct.
Not exactly a social thing. I want to ask Harvest, first of all, your mom named you?
Harvest is my given name.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Napa Valley, but neither of my parents have a connection to the wine industry. But my mother was Choctaw Indian, and she named me after the Harvest Moon.
There you go. Now, you went to sell, I love this story, you went to sell some orphan wines, some fruit, to Chuck Wagner.
So I had left a winery and was in pursuit of this like magical job description that didn't really exist for me at the time. And so along the way, I had met some growers that were out of contract. So I just decided, you know what? I have multiple people that I'm aware of. They don't have a contract for this vintage. I'll take on the responsibility of putting A to B and I'll find them a buyer. So I opened up the phone book back when we all had phone books. And I started at Winery A and I just started cold calling. And when I came to Camus, Chuck Wagner actually met me himself in the vineyard. So we were tootling around and went kind of row by row, block by block, and he was questioning me about the viticultural practices. And after about 30 minutes, he politely declined the fruit, saying it wasn't the quality he was looking for.
But he
offered me an opportunity much more exciting to come to work for him. So it was a very unexpected chance meeting that was 17 vintages ago.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Harvest Duhigg, Wagner Family Wines winemaker, Kristen Barnheisel from J. Lohr. How about your story? How did you get into this business?
You know, I grew up in, like you in Napa. I grew up in Sonoma County. I grew up in Santa Rosa. and my mom was working at Simi Winery when I was growing up. So I was introduced very early on in the catwalks at Simi in their Chardonnay program back when Zelma was winemaker there. So,
Kristen, did you seek out... We all seek out, no matter what we do, we seek out mentors. Two of your biggest mentors are women in this business, senior women in this business. Did you seek them out specifically because they were women and they would understand what you wanted to do?
No, okay. I can say that. In terms of Zelma, it was just happenstance that my mom was working at CME.
Wow.
And then that grew organically over the years into a mentorship as I chose to be in the industry.
Was it Zelma that suggested maybe you want to go do some harvesting and seasons in Italy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and had some travel in Italy and had some travel in South Africa as well.
And then
well.
You came back to
yes.
work for her?
And came back. I've done some work for her at Long Vineyards over the years. We did a when she had Long Vineyards, did some uniformity studies up there near Rutherford,
right.
So in Pritchard Hill. So have done some work for her and some projects for her over the years.
Okay.
And the other one was Mila Handley.
Yeah.
That I did seek out. I'd heard working with her was great. I tried some of her wines and very impressed. And when I went to go work with her, it was definitely there's a lot to be learned here.
How about that?
Yeah.
I should have been a gentleman and asked you what you were pouring today at the table. What are you pouring, Wagner family?
So today we have our 2016 Conundrum White, which is kind of exciting because it's a new vintage of a slightly different style of Conundrum White. And then we have 2016 MLO Sauvignon Blanc and MLO Merlot, which is both of those wines right. are made by Jenny Wagner and Chuck's daughter. And then we have our Red Schooner, which is a Malbec that we make from fruit out of Argentina. A lot of exciting stuff.
Harvest Duhigg, Wagner Family Wines winemaker, and Kristen Barnheisel from J. Lohr. Conundrum White, can you mess, because you said it's slightly different. Can you mess around with something that popular?
So Conundrum is made from 5 different white varietals.
So it's going to be, it'll change from year to year slightly.
Well, it's always been consistently and stylistically very similar. Like Conundrum White to me, of 26 years, I think, on the market, it is a wine that if you were tasting whites blind, you would come to Conundrum White, and it's so indicative in the nose of like Muscat, Canelli, and really fruity that you would know it in a lineup with your eyes closed. And we sort of just reapproached it, and so we've dialed back that Muscat character, which allows those other varietals to be more expressive. I think it's still recognizable as Conundrum White and equally as interesting, but it definitely has just a little bit softer approach.
And Kristen, what's the pour at J. Lohr?
Today we're pouring the Riverstone Chardonnay, the 2017 Riverstone, also a new vintage. And right here we have the 2016 Arroyo Vista Chardonnay, which you know well, yes. So we're very excited to kind of highlight this. Just recently received 92 points and very, very happy to see with the new vintage that it's doing well. And also we're pouring some Cabernets. So we're pouring the 2016 Seven Oaks Cabernet. Blend. As you know, just a very nice fruity wine with just a little bit of American and French oak on it. And then we have also our Hilltop Cabernet.
Wow.
And finishing off just now for the trade portion, we're also pouring a little bit just now for of our 2014 Carroll's Vineyard Cabernet from our Carroll's Vineyard in St. Helena. So.
Come on. Why am I talking into a microphone?
We have a few different interesting things that we're tasting today.
Okay, last question. Here it is. I am approached constantly by people who want to be what you are. Can you give them one piece of advice just off the top of your head? Harvest.
Hi. I think from my experience, it would be that you have to be willing to be fully engaged in the process
from the bottom
to the top. And that means in the cellar, you are dragging hoses, you're filling barrels, you are sampling tanks for 14 hours a day, 21 days straight during harvest. And there's no rest for the weary. It's a farming life. And so if your activities are in the vineyard, it's the same thing. You're pruning, you're tending, you're cultivating. And if you don't love it and feel really connected to the process and to, you know, the earth, then you may not be in it for very long.
Kristen?
I would say just keep learning. That's kind of the biggest thing that I've seen in the whole process, whether it's somebody came across my path and learned something from a conversation or a style, but your own as you go through the harvest in the years and you're experimenting. But there's so much to learn about wine and so much still that we don't know. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to be, 95 years old and still learning about wine. So.
Thank you both.
Isn't that the amazing thing about wine?
It is.
It's like a constant evolution.
It's wonderful. It makes it very special to work with every year.
Let's have a group hug. <Come on. laughs> Thank you.
Thank you.
Harvest Duhigg, Wagner Family Wines winemaker, and Kristen Barnheisel from J. Lohr.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020. The Dinners with Backyard Farm, the Bubbles and Crepes, Cheesy Weekend, Crab Boil, the Bubbles and Barbecue, the Harvest Barbecue, and the Days That the Wienery Truck Shows Up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. Wait until I tell you about next week's show. They're all great. It's the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's the final segment. It goes like this. Randy Ullum with the silver handlebar mustache and the silver gunslinger hair. He's the man behind Kendall Jackson. And Ray Signorello lives in West Vancouver and Napa. And his winery, Signorello, was burnt to the ground by the Napa fires. He's rebuilding and he's pouring here. That's the best thing. We're proud to present Randy Meyer, the senior winemaker at Geyser Peak, and a guy who looks like a linebacker, but is in fact the chief winemaker at Wente Family Estate, Carl Wente. When we finish this segment, we'll tell you about next week. Here we go.
Two of my favorite people in the whole world, Raymond E. Signorello from Signorello Estates, and from Jackson Family Wines, Randy Ullum, at the same table, at the same time. Gents, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
Great to be here.
Well, can you point where your house is? Can you see it from here?
I can see it right behind your head there.
It's like over there, right?
Let's talk about the other house to start, Ray, just to get that out of the way. You lost your family home and your estate home in the fires. I know that you're rebuilding. How did you rebuild yourself in your head and your heart?
You know, we kind of took stock of nobody got hurt. I mean, that was the biggest thing that night. We were early on in the fires that Sunday night, October 8th. And within the first hour, our facility was burned to the ground. And very fortunate nobody got hurt. So, you know, I look at that as the big takeaway here. I mean, we can rebuild the buildings. We didn't lose our vineyards. You know, we have vines there on the property between 30 and 40 years old. So, you know, I'm 55. I don't have another 30 or 40 years to go to see my vines get old. So we're really fortunate to have the vines as well. We had an early harvest in 17, which also gave us the ability to pick early.
Yeah.
And all the wine was made before the fire. So really, we're looking at just a building loss. Fortunately, I also paid my insurance bill that year, and they're helping us out with the rebuild. So we had a building that was originally conceived back in the 80s. And obviously, over time, you look at your building, you say, I wish this was a little different, or I wish I could do that. And you're always kind of confined within a certain footprint. But now we're getting the chance to build something from the ground up with all what we've learned over the last 40 years. And, you know, we look forward to about 2 years from today having the grand opening of Signorello Estate.
That sounds great. A clean slate to start, right?
Yes.
Randy, at the same time, where were you? What were you doing during that whole fire season?
Well, I live in the next valley over in Sonoma County, actually up in Healdsburg. So we, you know, these fires, and that's kind of where they first hit. They started up north of Calistoga and came racing over to Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
And then went north and went south and back over to Napa, all over the place. You know, it was radically windy and very speedy and amazing what happened. For us, and this is kind of what's interesting, is that you know, there's a lot of folks that will kind of move into an area and start a housing project and want to be in the country and say, oh, it's so beautiful. And then when they realize what goes on in vineyards, and they don't like the wind machines and the spring or the spraying, then they start complaining. But I think now everybody, for those who didn't lose their home, but their homes were saved by the vineyards because they acted as firebreaks, are very grateful.
Yep.
But it was, at the end of the day, I think it was about 5,500 homes in just between Sonoma and Napa.
True.
Families that lost their homes, yeah, that are in the act of rebuilding right now. And for us, you know, Barbara, we're, you know, it's a family-run and owned winery group. And Barbara Banke is very benevolent. And anyone who did lose their home, she basically took care of them and found them a place to move into immediately. So it was a like Armageddon there for a while, and so sad. And then it happened again this year.
Yep.
Going north.
Raymond Signorello from Signorello Estates and from Jackson Family Wines, Randy Ullum. Ray, what are you pouring today? Did you bring all of your brands?
Yeah, so we've got four brands here. We've got the Trim Wines, which would be a California Appalachian Chard and Cabernet.
Right. Yep.
Then the well-known Edge, Alexander Valley Cab, which has been a mainstay up here in British Columbia for many years. Fuse, Napa Cab, we have that. And obviously Señorelo Estate, we're pouring the Single Vineyard Estate Cab, which is sitting right here on the table in front of us.
When you had that conversation with yourself and with your team about let's make other wines besides just our big cab, who were you thinking about? Were you thinking about the new wine fan, a new generation of wine people?
Well, it started, the first wine outside of Señorelo was the Edge Project, which I started back in 2001. And the idea, as the name sounds, is we wanted to create something that was a little cutting edge, very contemporary packaged wine. It was a $20 Napa cab, which was affordable by Napa standards. So kind of an edgy idea. It wasn't a second label of Señorelo. It was a standalone project. So that's really how that came about. And then the other ones unfolded over time for different reasons. Trim, you know, we basically launched that in the middle of the worst economy, if you remember back what happened in 2008, 2009. Yeah. We launched that wine right after that. And the idea was we wanted to trim the cost. The style of the wine's a little trimmer, if you will. It's not a big bone Napa cab. It's basically a California Appalachian wine.
It's approachable.
Yeah, it's approachable both in its style and its price point. In BC, you know, low 20s.
Yeah, I love that. Raymond Señorelo from Señorelo Estates and from Jackson Family Wines, Randy Ullum. What are you pouring over the table?
Well,
Randy,
we've got a rosé, Vintners Reserve rosé, because that's like on fire these days. So it is mostly made from Pinot Noir, followed by Syrah and a little splash of Grenache. So it's a really pretty wine for spring and summer and fall and winter. And then, of course, we have our flagship, the Vintners Reserve, Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserve Chardonnay. Also, we have this little Jackson Estate wine from Santa Maria Valley, the sort of the filet mignon from the bench there. And, of course, we have a little our Hawkeye Cab from the Alexander Valley Mountains and our Stetcher, the pinnacle of our winemaking endeavors.
Okay, Randy Ullman, here's the deal. I look at you, and I see a gunslinger. Rosé doesn't fit with the gunslinger.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, sometimes you've got to listen, you know, and go with the flow and acquiesce. So I left my gun at the table.
Okay. What's the future, Ray, for Señorelo? What are you going to do?
Well, you know, it's to me, it's pretty exciting right now, in that I've got another full-time job of building a new winery and all what it takes to do that. So, you know, we've spent the last 13 months with architects, engineers, consultants. We're fortunate to get our permits last week, so now we can build. So we're building caves, winery, offices. You know, the fermentation cellars,
from
my residence.
Literally from the ground up.
From the ground up. Wow. So kind of with you know, on a blank slate of paper. So pretty interesting stuff.
How about you, Randy?
We're actually, something new that we're working on is we're redoing our Avant Chardonnay. It was originally sort of low oak, no oak. And now starting this year going forward, it's 100% stainless steel. Just for those folks that want that kind of a wine.
Sure.
So it's never seen a barrel, but it's a lot of fun. Something new and different. It's never going to replace Vintner's Reserve, we know that, but it's a little added extra.
Are you going to ride off into the sunset at some point?
Someday I will, on a horse, trust me. If not on a horse, on my skis on the backside of Whistler.
Thank you, man. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Now you have a great year. Have a great
Thank
year.
You.
Thank you. Raymond E. Señorelo from Señorelo Estates. And from Jackson Family Wines, Randy Ullum.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
This is Tasting Room Radio at the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. It's the trade tasting day. It's busy. And the reason why we came is because you can get to talk, in this case, to all the California winemakers and principals that you'd ever want to talk to. For example, Randy Meyer, the senior winemaker at Geyser Peak, and Carl Buente, the Chief Operating Officer, Chief Winemaker at Buente Family Estates. Interestingly enough, Carl, the words that sort of jump out at me are family and estate. There's very few family estate wineries.
There's fewer and fewer of us out there. We're the oldest continuously family-owned and operated winery in California, 100% estate grown. We've got 2,000 acres in the Livermore Valley and 1,000 acres down to Arroyo Seco Monterey. And so I get to oversee all the vineyards, all the winemaking, and all the bottling, packaging, and everything.
Does it necessarily follow that because it's family, because it's estate, that it would be better wines in the bottle?
You can't hold your hat on that. The wines have to stand for themselves. There's a lot of great winemakers out there that source grapes, that don't farm them themselves, that do an excellent job. But for us, it's a way to maintain control all the way through, maintain consistency all the way through. There's no grower relations department in our company because the farmers work for me, the winemakers work for me, and we all pull on the same side of the rope trying to grow the best sustainable grapes and make the yummiest wine we can.
Yummy.
Yummy. That's my technical term that I really go to.
No, yummy's good.
Yummy's a good thing.
Yummy's very good. I can understand that. Geyser Peak, its place in California wine.
Well, Geyser Peak actually has a pretty broad scope. We've got our California series, which, you know, is sourced from vineyards primarily in the northern interior, you know, Lodi region.
Yeah.
And then we go to Alexander Valley, Russian River Valley, Dry Creek Valley. So we really do kind of spread along a pretty broad spectrum of appellations. The wine I brought today is Russian River Valley Sauvignon Blanc, which is one of our, you know, premier growing and regions that we really love to you know, pull in grapes from. Because it just, there's something about Russian River. It just makes intense wines with a lot of character.
But each vineyard different from the next, as we come to expect, that you could be literally half a block down from someone else, and their Sauv Blanc would be completely different?
Absolutely. The one thing I like to tell people is that Sauvignon Blanc is probably one of the more persnickety varieties because it literally, you know, if you can harvest it at 22 bricks and it'll taste dramatically different than it would at 23 bricks. So you really have to stay on top of that maturity level and the style you're going for as to not let it get either too, you know, too green or too ripe. We tend to like more of the leaner style.
Yeah.
You know, harvested a little bit younger, so we can get more grapefruit, passion fruit, and not go into more of that kind of stone fruit, you know, peach, melon, and so we like to keep it, I wouldn't say New Zealandish, but definitely more of that crisp, you know, lean style.
What else are you pouring at the table?
Well, we've got Alexander Valley Cabernet or Devil's Inkstand, which is our, you know, really the I'll call it the bruiser of our Cabernets. A lot of barrel aging. Our best vineyards are pulled into that wine. We also have our California Cabernet, you know, more value priced, you know, for the everyday market. We also have our Pinot Grigio from California, definitely the coiffer of the group. And then, of course, the River Ranch's Russian River Sauvignon Blanc. And then lastly, I forgot one, Waterbend Chardonnay, which is Alexander Valley, which is our full barrel fermented, big Burgundian style, lots of winemaking involved in it. And that's, you know, been actually kind of a crowd favorite today.
Randy Meyer, Geyser Peak, and Carl Duente, the Chief Operating Officer, Chief Winemaker at Duente Family Estates. I wanted to ask you about Livermore. When I was in Piedmont and I went through the tunnel, is Livermore on the other side?
Livermore's on the other side, not too far from there, right? East Bay, you keep going a little bit further east before you hit the Altamont Pass. And so coastal valley, east-west orientation, we're blessed by warm days and
hot,
cool nights.
Hot.
It's not as hot as people think. And
come
now,
on, man. It's stifling in
there. You'll get a 90-degree day, but it'll hit 50 at night. I'm obviously talking our measurement of temperature. But we get accused of being hot, and that's from people that haven't spent many evenings out there. So I encourage you to come out and see how much it really cools off.
No, I spent 5 years there, man.
Well, but if you've been there, then you've seen all the windmills up on the Altamont Pass, and those are there because of the volume of air that comes off the bay. And from Livermore Valley, we're only about 25 miles as a crow flies from the bay. And same reason Mark Twain said the coldest winter he ever spent was the summer in San Francisco. We get that cooling influence that helps us make great wines.
How many of your wines are cool climate, would be classified cool climate?
Well, so Livermore is a Region 2, Region 3, and Arroyo Seco is a Region 1, Region 2. Yeah. So, you know, all of them are cool to moderate. And the wine we have here is our single vineyard Riva Ranch Chardonnay from our Arroyo Seco vineyard. Very cool climate down there. We don't end harvest for this Chardonnay until late October.
Wow. Nice. That's a hang.
That's a long time on the vine.
Wow.
Deep rich flavors, and it's barrel fermented, but the fruit is strong enough to hold up to those barrels, no problem.
And what else are you pouring?
At the table, we also have our single vineyard Riva Ranch Pinot Noir, our Southern Hills Cabernet Sauvignon that's grown in the Southern Hills of the Livermore Valley, our Sandstone Merlot, also from the Livermore Valley. And then there's a 9-liter of 2013 Charles Wetmore Cabernet over on the table. We just pulled the cork. Took two corkscrews to get that cork out.
In terms of family, where's the next generation?
The next generation, my sister has two children of Generation 6, and my cousin has three kids of Generation 6.
So do those kids know that they're doomed?
They don't know what's in for them quite yet, but they enjoy riding horses and running around the ranch.
I want to thank you both for sitting down and first of all, pouring for us, and have yourself an incredible year. And thank you to coming to Vancouver and bringing your art with you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Terry.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Cheers.
Randy Meyer, the senior winemaker at Geyser Peak, and Carl Duente, the chief operating officer, chief winemaker at Duente Family Estates.
Big thank yous to technician James Murray and the crew from Milk Communications, who we could not have done this without them. Kristen Wilkinson and the Wranglers, Bailey Jelinski and Anna Stuber. Kristen, Bailey, Anna, all from Milk Communications. And here's next week's show. Barry Olivier, Aquilini Red Mountain. True Wine Royalty, Jean-Charles Boisset and Gina Gallo. And then we talk to the Canadians. We start with Matt Dumain from Freeform Okanagan Crosspad, John Skinner, Painted Rock, Valerie Tate, Bench 1775, Stefan Arneson, Poplar Grove, Chris Yench from CC Yench, Randy Picton from Inkami, Victor Costa from Lake Breeze, Roland Kruger, Wild Goose, Bill Eggert from Fairview Cellars, Chris Wise from Burrowing Owl, Ross Baker from Quail's Gate, and then we finish with Nova Scotia, Bruce Ewart from Lacadie, Rachel Lightfoot from Lightfoot and Wolfville, and Jillian Main Guy from Benjamin Bridge. It's the 41st annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, Part 2, next week, Tasting Room Radio. You can find the details at mulliganstew.ca.